As we have been in this series of the relay, we've been talking about how the course of our life is described as a race. I've shared with you a number of scriptures that speak about how we have a race to run it with endurance, to run to win, to train so that we run to win. And all these things factor in to help us understand that God has a course set for us. But we've also seen that we have a part of the total race, and the total race is not just our own leg that we run in that race, but it's us handing off the things that we have learned and received and passing them on to others. We got specific about, as the scriptures say, older women speaking and working with and training the younger women, how to love their husbands, how to work in their homes, and those kinds of things. And also we saw that men are to work with other men and help them, train those that are faithful to be to take the word and to train others with that as well. And so with these different areas we've been looking at, we've seen how there it really is more than just a race. It is really a relay. And so thus the title of the series of messages, The Relay. And last week I shared with you the components of a relay. When you are running that relay, there's some critical periods, critical times in that relay that you're running, and one of the critical times is the handoff of the baton from one runner to the next. And we identified those components of the relay by seeing that there is a place that is called the exchange zone where that baton is actually handed from one runner to the next runner. But before that exchange zone, there is a mark that is placed so that when the first runner runs and hits that mark, that is the indication for the second runner to take off in the acceleration zone. It gives him some time to pick up speed so that by the time they get to the exchange zone, they're running at the same speed and it's easy to hand off, make a seamless, smooth transfer of the baton from one person to the other. And we see this actually happening in the race. And when the first runner comes up and hits that mark, then the next runner takes off in the acceleration zone. And through the acceleration zone and the exchange zone, then they are both running together. And then the handoff takes place. The second runner of the second leg takes off then, and the first one just hangs back then. He's done his part of the race. Last week when we went through this and talked about the components of the relay, we talked about being in a position ready to receive. So we were more focused on the second leg of the run or the second runner. And we saw the challenges. We saw a real failure that happened when the second runner or one of the runners in the race in the relay was just kind of standing there daydreaming. And the guy comes up behind him, ready to hand off, and he hasn't started running yet until the guy gets right up next to him. So totally blew the acceleration zone, totally blew the exchange zone, and totally blew the race. Then as a result of that being distracted, his mind was wandering. He wasn't focused. All those descriptive words that were used by the announcers as we showed that relay race by video. And so it's so important to be ready to receive that baton. But today, we're talking more about the critical handoff, that there is another person that has to hand that off to make that a successful transfer from one runner to the next runner. And so it's got to really work between the both of them. So we're going to start today talking about teammates. And we see characteristic qualities of a teammate as to who will run the next leg of this race. Who are we going to entrust with this baton? And when we're talking again about spiritual things or things regarding the church, Paul has these instructive words for Timothy when he says to him, "The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Now we understand that, you know, scripturally, the use of the word men is generic and it's men and women. We understand that the realities of things being transferred and it's not just one sex or the other. But when Paul is speaking to Timothy in this passage, 2 Timothy 2:2, he speaks about, looking for people that are going to be faithful. and looking for people who are not going to hang onto the baton for themselves, but run with that baton and be ready to hand it off to someone else as well. Faithful men who will be able to teach others as well. So again, right there we see the relay. It's to go from one to the next to the next. And when we were praying this morning for the generational, the younger ones, it's like they are in the prime in their 20s and 30s to be receiving things that us elders will be handing off to them. And so we need to pray for their focus. Pray that they're not distracted by the things of the world, so that they're ready to receive, and pray that they're taking seriously life. You know, we've in some of our men's fraternity studies, we've talked about how there's so much of what is happening in our world today, among especially the 20s and even younger 30s, is what's called the extended adolescence. Whereas instead of being responsible and responsible to educate, responsible to develop skills, responsible for being a blessing to society, instead we're going to sit home in mom and dad's basement and play video games. You know, just like I was still a teenager. You know, you had the freedom to do that when you're a teenager, but it's time to grow up. It's time to take the baton. It's time to watch for someone to hand off that baton to you. And so we really do need to be praying for this next generation to help them to be ready to receive that handoff. But when we're talking about handing off, then I want to take some time to share with you some biblical handoffs over the course of the coming few weeks as we continue in the series. But today I'm going to share with you a biblical handoff and see the example of the relay components happening in this biblical handoff between Moses and Joshua. And between Moses and Joshua, first we're going to start out with them in the acceleration zone, as we would call it in the relay race. And I'll have you turn with me to Numbers chapter 11. And the scriptures, I have hardly any on the screen today. You'll just be following along with me because there are larger portions of scripture. I won't read all of the portions, but make reference to. So we're going to start, though, in Numbers chapter 11. And remember that Moses was instrumental in leading the people of Israel out of Egypt, out of bondage. God, through his mighty power, made the way possible for them, and God had called upon Moses to be their leader, to lead them in the exodus of Egypt. And but we also see then this young man, Joshua, who really starts working together with Moses in what, like I'm calling here, an acceleration zone. Numbers chapter 11 and verse 26 through 29. Actually, I'm going to start back in 24 because it makes reference to some elders. And if we went back even farther in here, that's why you need to know where we're talking. And we won't just pull this verse out of context. But Moses was really struggling because of the whining. It actually uses that word in this translation, New Living Translation. The whining of the people when they say, all we have to eat is this manna. And we remember the fine meats of Egypt. Oh, should we go back? Can we just let us go back to Egypt? And they wanted fine meat and all this kind of stuff. And Moses finally gets so discouraged. He's saying, God, put me out of my misery. Just take my life right now. I don't want to continue on with this. These people, miserable people, and they're whining. And the Lord says, no, that's not going to work. But he says, I will supply them some meat. And so God did a very foul thing. And he brought quail so that they would have meat to eat. And you can see all of that in there. But anyway, Moses is also talking about, you know, this is too much for me. And so God ordains that he bring in 70 leaders to help him with the issues that he has to deal with. And in that selection of the 70, there's a tremendous event that takes place here where he takes them out to the tent of meeting. And they all start to prophesy. They all start to speak. The Spirit of God comes upon them and they start to prophesy. And it's just an awesome thing. But there's two guys that aren't out there at the tent of meeting. They're still back among the people. And that's where we pick up verse 24. It says, so Moses went out and reported the Lord's word to the people. He gathered the 70 elders and stationed them around the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to Moses. Then he gave the 70 elders the same spirit that was upon Moses. And when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. But this never happened again. Two men, Eldad and Medad, had stayed behind in the camp. they were listed among the elders, but they had not gone out to the tabernacle. Yet the Spirit rested upon them as well. So they prophesied there in the camp. A young man ran and reported to Moses, "Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp." Joshua, son of Nun, who had been Moses' assistant since his youth, protested, "Moses, my master, make them stop." But Moses replied, "Are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them all." Then Moses returned to the camp with the elders of Israel. So what we see here is we see this young man, Joshua, who was called Moses' assistant from his youth. So at a very early, very young age, Joshua is starting in what I would call the acceleration zone, in that he's working with Moses as an assistant. But, and this is, I think, kind of an enduring trait about Joshua, although he had to be corrected. It says that he was jealous for Moses' sake. What I see in that is, you know, I see a loyalty. I see, you know, Joshua saying, "Hey, wait. He's the leader. Why are these guys out there doing it? You know, I can understand these guys here with the leader doing it, but why are these guys out there who didn't come to the tabernacle? Why are they, Moses, tell them to stop." And Moses said, "No, we don't need to do that." So Moses did correct him. But again, it's kind of a neat thing how Joshua was expressing his loyalty and his jealous for the position of Moses, for Moses' sake, not for his own, but for Moses' sake. And so kind of a neat thing, but he did have to be corrected. And in this, we see, as it describes in chapter 12 and verse 3, it says, "Now Moses was very humble, more humble than any other person on earth." And we see that right there. It's like Moses isn't getting disturbed about others ministering by the Spirit, others prophesying, the Spirit of God coming on them. He's going, "Yeah, I wish everyone was doing it." You know, it's like he was there for the sake of the people. He was there for the will of God to be done, and he was not protective of his position. That's a challenge that often happens with leaders not willing to pass on the baton, is that they are protective of their position and saying, "Wait a minute now, if I lose my place of authority, then what will I be?" So there can be a real identity crisis in those kinds of things. And this is something we need to guard against, that we are not unwilling to hand on the baton because of our position, or protecting or being jealous for our own position. We'll see an example of that as we continue on. But then in Numbers chapter 13, we see Joshua was one of the 12 spies. Moses sent 12 spies into the promised land to scope out the land, and that's when they come back, and 10 of them were all, "No, we can't do this. We're like grasshoppers in the eyes of those giants, and grasshoppers in our own eyes. We're not going to be able to do this." However, Joshua and Caleb, they came back with a report that says, "Yes, we can take it. God has said." And we see specifically in verse 8, it says Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun, and down in verse 16, it says these are the names of the men Moses sent out to explore the land. Moses called Hoshea, son of Nun, by the name of Joshua. So there we see that he was one of those, and he, together with Caleb, who is in verse 6, Caleb, son of Jephunneh, were the two that came back with the good report. And then as a result of them being faithful, in Numbers chapter 14, verse 30, Caleb and Joshua were two of the 12. I got to keep up with myself here. Numbers 14, Caleb and Joshua, two of the 12 that survived. Now, remember that the judgment that came upon Israel is that everyone over the age of 20 was going to die in the wilderness. And really, they judged themselves. They said, "Would that we had died in the wilderness rather than go and, you know, God bring us to this place and be killed by giants." And God said, "Okay, have it your way." You know, you need to be careful when you're declaring to God the way it ought to be. He might just say, "Okay, have it your way." And it's not his way, and it's not the good way, but we need to be careful about that. And so here we see, again, these two coming back with a good report. And as a result of that, it says that they survived. I'll read it, actually, verse 30 of chapter 14. Okay, it says, you will not enter and occupy the land I swore to give you. The only exceptions will be Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. So they were the ones that survived and actually went into the promised land then. And you can read all about that in the book of Joshua. Okay, so now we're going to go to Exodus chapter 17. And we're going to see how Moses is giving direction. Exodus chapter 17, Moses is giving direction to, and remember that these five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, were all written by Moses. So these are firsthand accounts, really, from this leader of Israel. And Moses gives a directive to Joshua when the Amalekites were coming to war against them. And in verses 8 through 10, it says, while the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of the nearby hill. Okay, so what I wanted you to see in this, again, is Moses is giving directive. He commands Joshua to fight the Amalekites, and then Joshua did what Moses commanded. So he was responsive, he was responsible, he obeyed the directive of the leader that God had put over him. He was his assistant, and he proved himself to be faithful as an assistant to Moses. And then in Exodus chapter 32 in verse 17, we see that Joshua, again, he's hanging real close to Moses. He doesn't go all the way up Mount Sinai, but he's partway up, so that when Moses is on up on Mount Sinai, he's receiving the law. Remember, he receives the Ten Commandments. He receives the civil law that is supposed to govern the people of Israel, and he also receives the blueprints of the tabernacle, the place of worship that they were to have that would be mobile along with them as they went through the wilderness. But here it says in chapter 32, chapter 32 and verse 17. Give me just a moment here. It says, when Joshua heard the boisterous noise of the people shouting below them, he exclaimed to Moses, it sounds like war in the camp. This is when Moses is coming down with the tablets of the Ten Commandments. But Moses replied, no, it's not a shout of victory nor the wailing of defeat. I hear the sound of a celebration. And so when they came down, they saw the golden calf, and Moses throws down the tablets, and they break, and he's all upset, and he corners Aaron and says, what's this going on? He says, we just threw the gold and silver into the fire, and boom, out popped this calf, this golden calf. And he goes, yeah, right. How gullible do you think I am? But and Moses pounded up, ground up that golden calf and made them drink it in their water. It's like, wow, you really don't want your own way. But so anyway, we see Joshua in a special place with Moses, not all the way up the mountain, but he's partway there. He's in that, what I again would call that acceleration zone. And now here's another neat experience in Exodus chapter 33 and verse 11. It says this, inside the tent of meeting, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. Afterward, Moses would return to the camp, but the young man who assisted him, Joshua, son of Nun, would remain behind in the tent of meeting. So he's tracking with Moses, and he knows the special place to be, where God meets with this man. God meets with Moses face to face as a man would to his friend, and he speaks to him intimately, he speaks to him directly, and Joshua's going, I like this intimate place. I like this place of God's presence. Moses, I understand you're going back to the camp, but can I just hang out here for a while? And you see him embracing that special quality of that leadership that Moses had, where he went to the Lord, he would speak to him as a man to his friend, face to face, and Joshua's embracing that. And again, I would say he's in that acceleration zone. And who knows, you know, Joshua may have had some inkling, some understanding that, you know, there's a place for me here. God has something for me. We don't see the details of that until God speaks to Moses about that. And yet we see, even though, because we know the end of the story, we can look back and we can see he's really in an acceleration zone where he is getting up to the speed where at the time, when the time is right, there's going to be able to be the handoff of that baton of leadership for Israel. Okay, so just some other directives then. Now we're going to talk about Moses and Joshua in the exchange zone when things are starting to be handed off, where the baton is being handed off, and we'll turn to Numbers chapter 27, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Numbers chapter 27, and starting with verse 12, I'll read verse 12 through 17 first of all. It says, "One day the Lord said to Moses, 'Climb one of the mountains east of the river and look out over the land I have given to the people of Israel. After you have seen it, you will die like your brother Aaron, for you both rebelled against my instruction in the wilderness of Zin. When the people of Israel rebelled, you failed to demonstrate my holiness to them at the waters.'" These are the waters of Meribah and Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. Okay, how did Moses rebel? Someone answer. What did he do? He struck the rock and it brought forth water. Now, why was that bad? He was supposed to speak to the rock. He had struck the rock before and out came water, and that was okay because that was the directive of God. But then God told Moses, speak to the rock to bring forth the water. And instead, I mean, he was all upset again with the people of Israel. And I'm sitting here wanting to go, God, have a little compassion here. But Moses didn't obey the word of the Lord. And instead of revealing the power of God, again, he strikes the rock instead of speaking to it. But God had directed him, speak to the rock. But in the eyes of God, that was an act of rebellion that Moses had done against the word of the Lord. But so anyway, that's why. Now, where was I? Verse 15. "Then Moses said to the Lord, 'O Lord, you are the God who gives breath to all creatures. Please appoint a new man as leader for the community. Give them someone who will guide them wherever they go and will lead them into the battle, so the community of the Lord will not be like sheep without a shepherd.'" And so, again, here you see the Lord's directive to Moses is, look over the land, this is where they're going to go, but then you're going to die. You're going to pass, just like your brother Aaron. And but before, you know, this is a time where Moses is saying, okay, God, my request is that you give them a leader. Then give them someone who's going to enable them to, you know, go into this new land. Give them someone to lead this community of your people. And then continuing on with verses 18 through 23, the Lord replied, "Take Joshua, son of Nun, who has the spirit in him, and lay your hands on him. Present him to Eleazar the priest before the whole community, and publicly commission him to lead the people. Transfer some of your authority to him so the whole community of Israel will obey him. When direction from the Lord is needed, Joshua will stand before Eleazar the priest, who will use the Urim, one of the sacred lots cast before the Lord, to determine his will. This is how Joshua and the rest of the community of Israel will determine everything they should do." So Moses did as the Lord commanded. He presented Joshua to Eleazar the priest and the whole community. Moses laid his hands on him and commissioned him to lead the people just as the Lord had commanded through Moses. So we see all of this. We see here is actually where the baton is being passed. They're in that acceleration zone where they've been running. Joshua has, in essence, caught up with the leadership capacity to take over and give leadership to this community according to Moses' requests and according to the will of God. And so here is that passing on when the Lord says to him, he says, take Joshua, he has the spirit in him, lay your hands on him, publicly commission him, transfer some of your authority to him. And that's the handing off of the baton. And it says that Moses did as the Lord commanded. Now in Deuteronomy in chapter 3, we'll see a similar occurrence or instance of this occurrence, chapter 3 and verses 21 through 29. I'll start with 21 through 25. It says, "At that time I gave Joshua this charge. You have seen for yourself everything the Lord your God has done for these two kings. He will do the same for all the kingdoms on the west side of the Jordan. Do not be afraid of the nations there, for the Lord your God will fight for you. At that time I pleaded with the Lord and said, 'O sovereign Lord, you have only begun to show your greatness and the strength of your hand to me, your servant. Is there any God in heaven or on earth who can perform such great and mighty deeds as you? Please let me cross the Jordan to see the wonderful land on the other side, the beautiful hill country and the Lebanon mountains.'" Okay, so Moses is still hoping here that God would change his mind about that. But he says here, he says that Moses charges Joshua. He starts out by charging Joshua. He says, "I gave Joshua this charge." And then it says that Moses pleads with God, "Let me cross to the other side." And then let's continue on with verse 26. "But the Lord was angry with me because of you." This is, he's talking to the people of Israel again. "He was angry with me because of you, and he would not listen to me. 'That's enough,' he declared. 'Speak of it no more. But go up to Pisgah Peak and look over the land in every direction. Take a good look, but you may not cross the Jordan River. Instead, commission Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he will lead the people across the Jordan. He will give them all the land you now see before you at their possession." So he stayed in the valley near Beth Peor. So again, what you see here is Moses giving the directive. It says that, God would not allow him, but instead he says, commission Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him. And then it says that he will lead the people and will give them the land. So although Moses is understanding the directive of the Lord, and he's not reluctant to lay his hands on Joshua, to commission him, to publicly commission him, to transfer some of his authority, he'd requested God would give a leader. Still, you can see the hesitancy of Moses not wanting to pass off the baton. "I'm going to miss something. If I'm not still there, Lord, I'm going to miss something in this precious promised land that you've given your people." And God said, "That's the way it is." And so anyway, he said, "I don't want to hear any more about it, Moses. Enough." All right. And so now we see then the next leg, Joshua and the next leg. Remember, the course of the relay is in a number of sections, or a number of what they call legs. And so now we see Joshua running his leg of the race, and we'll start with Deuteronomy chapter 34. You know, this is amazing stuff. There is so many, I could get so many sermons out of these five books of the New Testament, or the Old Testament, the books of Moses, the Pentateuch, it's also called, if you want that term. But there's so many things in here, but we're just highlighting a couple of things in regard to this series of message of the relay. So Deuteronomy chapter 34, and I'm just going to bring out a couple of verses here. Verses 5 through 8, it says, "So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, just as the Lord had said, and the Lord buried him in a valley near Beth Peor in Moab, but to this day no one knows the exact place. Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyesight was clear, and he was as strong as ever. The people of Israel mourned for Moses on the plains of Moab for 30 days until the customary period of mourning was over." So, again, according to the word of the Lord, Moses died in Moab. And then look at verse 9. It says, "Now Joshua, son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him, doing just as the Lord had commanded Moses." So here again, Joshua, he's full of the spirit and wisdom, as it says here. Moses had already laid his hands on him, so there was the transfer of that baton, so to speak. And it says, then the people of Israel obeyed Joshua. In other words, they embraced God's ordination of the one who had been the servant of Moses and now had received the commission publicly to lead the people. And the people said, yes, we will follow. And it says that they obeyed everything that Joshua had given them. Now, I have this question before we go on. Was it God or was it Moses that handed off the baton to Joshua? The answer is yes. It was both, really, because obviously it was God ordained and God gave the instruction to Moses, but there was a point where Moses had to be obedient to the directive of the Lord and to the timing of the Lord. Moses had to obey when God said, you lay your hands on him, you put him up before the people publicly, commission him publicly, so everyone knows that this is a transfer of leadership that is happening. So really it was both of them, God and Moses, that had handed off the baton to Joshua. And again, we continue to see Joshua in this leg that he's running in Joshua chapter 1. Verses 1 through 5, it says, after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant. He said, Moses, my servant, is dead. Therefore, the time has come for you to lead these people, the Israelites, across the Jordan River into the land I'm giving them. I promise you what I promised Moses. Wherever you set your foot, you will be on the land I have given you, from the Negev, wilderness in the south to the Lebanon mountains in the north, from the Euphrates River in the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west, including all the land of the Hittites. No one will ever be able to stand against you as long as you live, for I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. What we see here is the coach on the sideline saying, okay, you've got the baton now. Run with it. You go with it like Moses went before you, and you keep going because I'm going to be with you just like I was with him. God is really coaching Joshua along in his leadership to go in and take that land then. And okay, and then let me go ahead and read verse. Oh, do you want some notes? The time has come for you to lead, he says. I will be with you as I was with Moses. And then continuing on with verses 6 through 9, he says, be strong and courageous, for you are the one who will lead these people to possess all the land I swore to their ancestors I would give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey the instructions Moses gave you. Do not deviate from them, turning either to the right or to the left. Then you will be successful in everything you do. Study this book of instruction continually. Meditate on it day and night, so you will be sure to obey everything written in it. Only then will you prosper and succeed in all you do. This is my commandment. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So again, the instruction here is, he says you will lead these people to possess it. Obey all the instructions Moses gave you. Now, he had five books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, that was this, that he was supposed to study this book of instruction. And if he did this, then there was a conditional thing. He said, do it, do everything that's written in it. And then he says, you will prosper and you will succeed. And then he continues on saying, be strong and courageous. So God, again, he's coaching from the sideline. He's saying, you go now. This is your time. This is the baton. The baton is in your hands, and I want you to take off with it and be careful how you run with it. And then in verse 17 of that passage, Joshua 1, it says, the people respond to Joshua and say, we will obey you just as we obeyed Moses, and may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Now, so here we see the people are embracing and responding. They have accepted this transfer of leadership. They didn't hold back and say, oh, we wish we had still had Moses. We respected him so much. He was a man of authority. He was a humble man. Never had to worry about him being jealous for his own sake. And, you know, and so all of these things, they didn't do that. They said, yes, God, we will accept this new leader and we will obey just as we obeyed Moses. Okay, and then in Joshua 5, I just want to point this out before we get off of Moses and Joshua. In Joshua 5, part of this leg that he's running, he encounters what I would say is an Old Testament appearance of the Lord, or at least he's described here as the commander of the Lord's army. In Joshua 5 and verse 13 through 15, when Joshua was near the town of Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with sword in hand. Joshua went up to him and demanded, "Are you friend or foe?" "Neither one," he replied. "I'm the commander of the Lord's army." At this, Joshua fell with his face to the ground in reverence. "I am at your command," Joshua said. "What do you want your servant to do?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did as he was told. And so, again, what we see is a man of God who had embraced the leadership and had respected that presence of the Lord. Remember, Joshua had understood about meeting with the Lord face to face, and he understood the act of humility, even as he saw in his leader, Moses. And so now he's taking the baton, he's running with it, and when he meets that commander of the Lord, he's ready to respond to him. And then we're not going to look this one up, but just this note in Joshua chapter 29 and verse 31, it says, the people of Israel served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua. So what a tremendous commentary of what I would describe as being basically a seamless passing of the baton of leadership from one to the next in that race that God had given them to run. Now, transfers don't always happen that smoothly. And we're going to look at this, when to transfer, and there's a critical time, as I called this message, a critical handoff. There's a critical time where that baton is passed on. And so we're going to look at another video example of a relay. So if you want to maybe pull down the stage lights to get a little bit of light off of the screen, and I'm going to show this video to you now. Oh, the stage lights, please.
Likely, with this massive stag up, will be difficult to tell who's going well. But obviously at the moment, it is Solomon United States that's running well. Just on the outside also, Dakoma of France running well. And on the inside in lane three, Jamaica also putting an effort in. Henry Robertson running well. But it's the United States now with Solomon coming into this changeout. It's United States in the lead.
And for the United States, Kimberly Duncan taking the baton now. And she's, runners outside are just pulling up. But it's United States. Germany, of course, have run well right on the outside. And on the middle lanes, we've got Jamaica and Nigeria. But this is the United States of America who are going to take a big lead after two laps. Then the battle on in lanes three and four.
United States look as though they are away. This is Geneva Tamo on the third leg. And the lead is a big one. For Nigeria in pursuit, Regina George, but the United States are flying down that back straight. And the final leg for the United States is going to be run by the great Alison Felix. Terrific support for the Bahamians, who are making up some ground. But the United States hand over in front.
Oh, now there's a calamitous changeover. The USA crashing out. The lead has counted for nothing. And Nigeria storming around the bend with nobody close to them. Bahamas are making a terrific run. For the Bahamas, closing in is Shaun A. Miller. Is she going to be able to close the gap? Out in front is Chris Udo. Shaun A. Miller running hard all the way through to the line. Nigeria first, Bahamas second, Jamaica third. And we mentioned the fact that the relay changeovers could well be precarious. But the USA have practically gifted Nigeria two-lap relay gold in this women's final. They are absolutely distraught because the changeover where Alison Felix was hoping to pick up and consolidate and increase that lead from Jennifer Tarbo, well, it's gone up in smoke like we're seeing from the pyrotechnics here.
And what about the Jamaicans as well? They were expected to be up there contending, and from second leg onwards, they were nowhere.
There is a catalogue of errors here. Let's just look. This was the problem. This was Felix trying to get the baton unsuccessfully from Tamo.
But the thing was, they had a margin there. They had a margin of error, as it were, because they could have just relaxed.
Okay, so now leave the lights down a little bit. I apologize for showing over and over again here the agony of defeat, but what I want you to see is there's a particular spot where she held on to the baton instead of handing it off. And then it's like, okay, let's exchange this. And oh, now, boom, I hit you in the head with my elbow. And boom, I drop the baton so I can catch my balance here now as a result of that handoff. And I'm going to show it to you probably two or three more times here. I'm repeating this in slow-mo so that you can see, again, not just, oh, you know, just this, you know, just think of the sorrow, you know, of here you got this huge lead and you're at the end, the last handoff here, and just, oh, it hurts so much. You can see that in there. Their expressions there, but here again,
error as it were, because they could have just relaxed.
And now watch her. She hangs on to it. Right there she should have exchanged, but she still got a hold of it. She still has a hold of it. And then the other is, please give it to me. Give it here. Here, take it. Take it. She's still hanging on to it. When it goes through her hand, she still got a hold of it. She didn't let go. And then they're trying to make that exchange when one starts running backwards and actually turns around. And I think this one goes all the way through it to the end again where, you know, she's trying to hand off. So she's turning around to grab it, does a full 360 turn and gets hit in the head with the elbow as the other one's trying to get out of the way and hand it off underhanded, underarm. And then she can't hold it and has to catch her own balance after being hit in the head. And so there goes the baton down on the ground, and we lost the race. The race is done for them. And where they had, like I said, they had this huge lead, and now, you can turn the lights back up, thank you. They had this huge lead, and now they're, you know, nothing. And it was all because of, in this case, I believe, by the evidence seen in the video, one held on to the baton too long. And so you need both. You need the one ready to receive, but you need the other one ready to hand it off at just the right time. And that's why they clock out that mark for the second person to start in the acceleration zone for them to be going together and to have a handoff. And when they both had their hand on the baton, one didn't let go. And so we need to consider that when we're talking about, you know, what are the challenges for the transfer. I don't want to put that one up yet. Challenges for the transfers. First of all, there's uncertainty. I think this is what can happen sometimes. It's like, I don't know if they are ready or not yet to receive it. And so I'm not willing to let it go yet. I think that's what happened here. We don't know exactly what happened, but that's what it looked like. Is I don't know if she has a hold of it. I better keep hanging on so we don't drop this baton. But then the other person couldn't take it because she kept hanging on to it. Insecurity. It's like, I know what I can do, but I don't know what they will do. Now, there's a difference, too, between knowing what they can do and knowing what they will do. It's like, I know this is a good runner, but I don't know if they will run good. And so there can be this hesitation for the handoff. And think about it when we are trying to hand off to others responsibilities, things that we have done ourselves and we know what we can do, and we maybe know they have the capacity, but will they do it the way we think it should be done? And so we're hesitant to hand it off. Or again, identity. What am I going to do now that my part is complete? I want to run across the finish line. I want them to see me on the end going and everyone shouting, look at who finished first. But here I'm back in this leg of the race that I finished a long time ago. And so, you know, that identity thing, what will happen to me when I pass this on? And we'll get into more details as we continue on about some of the challenges for ministry, some of the challenges that pastors have in passing on the baton. What am I going to do if I'm not pastor anymore? You know, that identity thing. But this applies to all kinds of situations in our lives, as I've shared with you, as parents with children. In our Growing Kids God's Way curriculum, they talk about the funnel. Whereas as a child continues to increase in their responsibility, there's also the need to increase their freedoms. And there's often this, we could describe it as the handing off of the baton of parents to their children, handing off the baton of responsibilities, and also handing off the baton of freedoms. And as they prove themselves responsible, you can expand their levels of freedom. But, you know, sometimes parents hold on too long. They either hold on too long with the responsibilities. You know, here they're a teenager and you're still cutting their meat for them at the table. you know, or cutting off the crust of their bread because they don't like crust or whatever, buttering their toast for them. But, you know, those are just simple, silly things maybe. But maybe when it comes to financial responsibilities or when it comes to how late they can stay out or whether they get to drive the car or not, you know, the responsibilities and then the freedom. Sometimes we're reluctant to pass those freedoms on or those responsibilities on because we're not sure what they're going to do with it. And so we have to be careful about that as parents. How about in business, the transfer, the timing of transfer with business? It's like, I've trained you to do this job, but rather than releasing them to do it, we're going to micromanage it. I'm going to watch over your shoulder now while you do the job because I really don't trust you. I've trained you, but I don't know if you're going to do it the way I would want you to do it. And so there's the micromanager, and the person who is under that micromanager has the greatest challenge to do it and to do it with freedom because they always feel like they're being questioned or challenged or judged in their decisions, and there's not that freedom. So there needs to, and I'm making application to everyday life situations here, there needs to be an appropriate timing of this transfer and not hanging on to the baton too long so that you both end up in a heap on the track because there has been a poor exchange. And then there's also the timing of transfer for ministry. You don't want to do it too soon or too late. And here's a situation where there was an attempted handoff of the baton, but this baton had a pointy end to it. This is Saul, and obviously he was not handing off the baton to David. He knew David was next in line, but he was jealous of David. In fact, you know, instead of the situation where Joshua was jealous for Moses, and Moses said, no, no, no. He said, would that God would put his spirit out on everyone. Saul is saying, I want my position, and I want to hold on to it, and I don't want this young whippersnapper coming in thinking who he is, and all the ladies are singing about him. David has killed his tens of thousands, Saul his thousands. So he's got favor with God. He went out and killed that giant, that Goliath, didn't use my armor, just went with his own little sling. And so Saul's thinking, this is not a good deal for me. And so I'm going to spear him out. I'm going to hand on this baton with this pointy end and just pierce him with it. But that wasn't God's plan at all. And eventually we see Saul in battle and losing his life at his own sword. Because of the way that ended. It did not end well. And you can look all of that up if you'd like to. That's in 1 Samuel, the last part of 1 Samuel, chapters 16 through 31. I've been going through a book, and this is what I've been sharing with our ministry leaders, and you'll get the next couple of chapters tonight, you guys, when you come. But talking about, the title of the book is Next, and it's talking about successful pastoral succession. Where, as I have shared with you folks just a little bit and with the ministry leaders much more, where my heart's desire is that this church would have a culture of transfer, where myself included, as well as the rest of our leaders, we're seeing that we're laying a foundation for a healthy succession, whether unexpectedly tomorrow or for years to come. Now, when I'm sharing these things, I don't want you to be concerned that, you know what, I wonder if Pastor Rogers, you know, leading up to a month from now, he's going to say, I'm done, passing this on. You don't have to worry about that. I'm seeing years to come, okay? However, you know, I want to share this with you, and I'll share a little more detail next week. There was an event 10 years ago where it was almost an unexpected change because my life was that close to being done. And so, like I said, I'll share the details of that with you another time, but we don't know. And so if we have at least talked about this and realized that for all of us, our time will be done sometime or another, and we don't desire or want the unexpected, but sometimes that happens. But if we have talked about this, we've created a culture for a healthy transfer, a healthy succession, be it unexpected or be it years to come. Remember the announcer, I loved it when they said, oh, calamitous change, you know, with the British accent, and the baton is dropped. But it's like, you know, we pray that there's no calamitous change here, but that there would be a smooth and seamless transfer that takes place after when the time is right. But So this culture of transfer includes a diligent and intentional training of leaders. And also, there would be the passing the baton or the baton well, which is the most crucial part of the relay. Realize that there is this huge thing, and God laid it out for Moses so that he knew the time and he knew the way to do it, and so that the people would respect that change and the people did embrace it. And then encouraging an environment where the eventual succession will be as seamless as possible. Now, there's lots of examples given in that book of succession that are not seamless, that they're disastrous. And we want to avoid that kind of heap ending up in a pile on the track because of a disastrous exchange. We'd like one that's as seamless as possible. And then creating a church culture where the conversation is normal and natural and supported by leaders at all levels. So we're not just holding back saying, you know, Jesus will probably come before I ever need to release leadership. So we're not even going to talk about that here. You know, that was one of the, as I shared with you before, that I was talking at Carrie and Caleb's wedding reception with a gentleman. And he's saying, so, you know, how's your church doing and so forth? And I'm saying, you know, things are going good. I said, we've got a couple of interns that, you know, we're training and looking at them, you know, to make this transfer. And he says, I don't think you'll have to do it. And I knew what he was saying. What he was saying is Jesus is going to come back first. And be that as it may, you know, hallelujah. I'd prefer that, wouldn't you all? You know, the closer we get to Jesus, the sooner he comes, the better. From my perspective, but let's prepare as though it might not happen before we need to pass it on or before he's done with our part of the relay, our course of our life here on earth. So we're going to make this a conversation that we're not uncomfortable with talking about and not jealous of position or identity or all those kinds of factors that can make an unseamless passing on and a heap on the track, so to speak. So, are you traveling with me so far? You ready to take another trip around the track? All right, you ready to be part of the relay? All right, amen. Let's pray.